many special people change? How many lives are living strange? Where were you when we were getting high? Slowly walking down the hall, faster than a cannonball. Where were you when we were getting high? Someday you will find me caught beneath the landslide, in a champagne supernova in the sky. Someday you will find me caught beneath the landslide, in a champagne supernova, a champagne supernova in the sky.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's a listener-supported broadcast that gives you, you know, access to important thinkers and people from around the world at no cost, right? You don't have to donate anything, but there's a proviso. If you do donate to support the show, make sure that you have all your bills paid and make sure your kids are fed and so on and so forth. You can't take care of other people unless you're taking care of yourself, or at least, you know, in theory. Technically, I kind of take care of people from all over the world that have all sorts of problems with agencies that are far outside my control that I actually really can't help them with other than listen to their story. And I think that actually helps quite a bit to have somebody there who's not calling you a crazy person and arguing with you with stupid BS. This is also a very biased broadcast, all right? Don't make no mistakes, ladies and gentlemen. One person came up to me at Occupy Auckland once and he says, you know, Vinnie, I really like your news and the things that you put out because it's totally unbiased. And I go, that's absolutely not true. It's completely biased, but it's just the kind of bias that you need. You know, we have a guest in here. Hey, I might not even agree with my guest. This is another thing. I was just actually wondering about this, a moral conflict, all right? Am I being emotionally or morally rudderless by giving everybody a fair shot on the show, not second-guessing them, and just kind of playing the jovial, fun radio show host so that they can feel comfortable enough to elucidate their feelings? That's the intention. But it might in some cases, with people that I don't agree with, I won't actually disagree with them on air. Again, that points that we agree on. Aspect. That's the kind of thing it is. So if you hear something on this show and you hear me agreeing with it, doesn't necessarily mean I actually totally agree with it. I might be entertaining the possibility, but don't make decisions on your life based upon interviews that I've done with people on this show. You really do need to research this, all right? If you hear about somebody here first and you've never heard of them before, don't change your life based on one thing that they've said. This is your opportunity to actually look at that person more closely, have a look at all of their other works and whatnot. That's why we get so many different people on here, some people who have never even been on radio before, because some of their things that they're talking about actually have a lot of value. And some of them maybe not so much, but it's up to you, the listeners, to go and research and practice some form of discernment yourself. I'm just the douchebag with a microphone making everything fun for everybody so that you can at least hear some of the information that is out there in the accumulated existence of mankind that the mainstream media shuts out or shuts down. That is my purpose. And I'm a slave to that cause. If you want to pay me for my slavery, that'd be very nice. Go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and give some of your hard-earned slave-taxed wages to me so that I can fight the New World Order, ignorance, and scumbaggery in your stead. If you don't have the 14, 15, 16, sometimes 18-hour days free to expose scumbaggery like I do, and that's only because of your support, by the way, then support somebody who's actually doing it in your stead. You know, just play your part. Everybody has different parts to play, and all of them are important, because it's like a machine with all these thousands upon thousands of wheels and cogs and levers and what have you. If one little part of that machine breaks down, the whole part of the machine breaks down with it. Okay? The micro to the macro. Oh, yeah, bro. That's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It all rhymed quite a bit, didn't it? My very special guest is Jerry Avalos. His websites are thehollowtree.com. That's hollow, H-O-L-O, as in hollow back, brother. and also intrinsicenergyinnovations.com. So, Jerry, welcome back.
Thanks.
You had a direction you wanted to take this in, didn't you?
Yeah, because I just realized that we kind of glossed over some of the things that we actually do. So I'm sure there's some people going like, well, what do you guys actually make? Some of the things that we make is a type of treated jewelry, like I mentioned, that it will increase the conductivity levels or balance the bioelectric field, I'm sorry. Then the other one that is really fun for us too, because it's really where we start getting any empirical foothold on what we're doing here, is with cars, actually. And what we're doing is we're using our, in a sense, passive wave generator system to help reduce the noxious particulates from cars and diesel trucks and such. So this has been just intriguing work, because for, once again, those who are familiar with, say, with the, you know, stuff, you know, called organite, it's a similar kind of process, because it's a composite material of metals, crystals, and a resin, and then we treat it with our information waves. And essentially, without having to have a chemical interaction, without necessarily even having it next to the gas tank, just in approximation, about 10 feet or so, you'll see the results with this thing is that it'll reduce the pollution coming out of the tailpipe if you put it on a smog meter. If you actually put it with a 5-gas analyzer, you're going to see the NOx go down. We don't get failures on that. That's one of the things that we guarantee. And we've done some interesting tests with that. And there's a lot of different, well, I don't necessarily say a lot, but there's a handful of other companies that have similar systems that we do with the scalar treatment systems.
Would you be able to be more specific about the tests that you've actually done in order to verify the product, the effect of this device that you're talking about?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. What we do is we've done multiple before and after tests at state certified smog shops here in California. And the smog board here in California is fairly stringent on its taxpayers, as we know. So it's pretty elaborate kind of setup that they have all the cars go through. So it's a battery of sort of tests at idle and at different RPMs. And then they have basically a type of probe that's in the tailpipe. They call it a 5-gas analyzer because, well, some of the things it looks at is hydrocarbons, CO2, O2, noxious particulates, and I forget one there, but and oxygen levels, actually, I suppose. So we're looking at these, and we're doing a before test. We have a car come in. We get a baseline from it without applying our device. And we let it do its thing. We let the cat get hot and everything and then test it. And then after that, we let it sit, let the catalytic converter go ahead and cool off again, and then introduce our technology, and then do it after. And so about rights and purposes, it should pretty much be the same within negligible range. And so what we're seeing, though, on average is 30% plus reduction in noxious particulates. Sometimes it's huge. Sometimes even we've had... And this is kind of where, for some people, the selling point is passing the smog test. But for some people, if they're spitting out, you know, 1,200 parts per million of noxious particulates, and we knock that down 700 parts, it's still going to fail. But we still did over half reduction in noxious particulates. You know, that was quite a few parts per million of these different nitrates and, you know, basically NO and NO2. Is what NOx is, for those interested in knowing what that is. And so we're seeing this change. And we've done this multiple times now. I'm not sure how many. We have a handful of them that we were able to document very specifically and have good records of it. And some of that is available on our website, the Holotree and Intrinsic Energy Innovations. And on our Facebook too. Our Facebook pages, we actually have some, a lot of times the updates sometimes go there for some of the raw stuff. So for those of you interested in raw data, a lot of times we'll post it there, and then we post the easier to view versions, you know, on our website. Because we like publishing as much of the data as we can, because we know verifying that we're doing something for one, And then too, we like to include people on the process. We like to include our potential clients and on what's going on here. You know, it's very exciting technology, and we're not here to say, oh, it's ours, it's mine, we can't share it. It's not like that at all. Because we want people to know, because it also gets into, you know, what purchases they're going to make and recommendations. So with this gas technology, we love feedback in particular, because we've noticed certain makes and models work better for whatever reason, because sometimes there is added benefits that we don't guarantee, but we've observed these effects. So I want to just make that clear that I'm not guaranteeing what I'm about to say right now. We're just saying we've observed these effects with irregularities depending on makes, models, whatever. But some people do get an increase in their gas efficacy, for instance. Mm-hmm. We've seen as much as 50% increase. We haven't figured out how to stabilize that specific aspect yet, though. But we've seen it in some cars, that's the significant point that we're finding out, because we have discussed our technology and integration of technologies with different, you know, you can say major labels in the automotive industry. And like they know too with efficacy. And we talked with people who have products certified in that, and they're kind of saying it's a red herring because of how people drive. It's like once you find out you're saving gas, you tend to just drive faster or more. And it's kind of like, poof, goes the savings, especially with people who really care, like how you made mention with the diesel industry and the trucking industry. It's like they would love that, right? But everything is shown, as soon as they know they get better gas, they're driving faster. So meanwhile, the pollution is still going up. So this is why everyone is focusing on the pollution and trying to knock that down. And so you have, and like I said, we're seeing conventional, in a sense, companies, additive companies, you know, hardware companies, they're looking at this too. So everyone is trying to do something for the air. So, I mean, hopefully that helps your listeners rest a little more sure that there is stuff being done to help counteract the pollution and chemtrails and stuff by more people than I think everyone realizes. And it is exciting because we're seeing it change. We have the hard numbers. So it's not like we're just guessing here, you know, things like that. It's like, no, we've seen it. We've actually done test too with a diesel opacity meter, which was really kind of profound, because how, in a sense, when we're talking about the exhaust systems like that, it's very small microscopic levels how they're measuring this. The opacity meter, diesel particulate opacity meters, are essentially like a camera, in a sense. It's watching how much smoke is puffing out. Because they want to make sure that smoke level keeps going down and down. They want diesels not to be polluting like that. And so we had a chance to have a test at one of these opacity meter makers. And we saw, I believe it was a 30% reduction once again. So it kind of correlated with what we've been able to stabilize. So this camera literally saw 30% less particles coming out of this vehicle than they had ever seen before. And this is without having to put anything in the gas tank, you know, either in or on. You know, this isn't something that goes in line in the fuel, so you don't have to bolt on anything at this time with this version. This is made for consumers for easy installation. All you gotta do is put it in proximity anywhere in the car. One of the tests that we have published right now, is with one of the graphics that I'm sure some listeners will find, was actually done with one of our pieces sitting in the front passenger side of the vehicle. So it wasn't even really that close to the gas tank, which would have been, you know, more towards the middle of the back seat. So it's showing that we're actually also able to create an area that's being affected, because we're not really sure it's radiating out or it's creating a field of influence, because it doesn't seem like there's much that can block it, like a field, like those radiators.
Have you thought about making perhaps something that would cover, say, an entire city center?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely feasible. And this, for ourselves, I mean, this is why we have a lot of our own sort of filtration devices, I guess you can say, that we're testing, that we like to release as soon as possible. And actually on the HoloTree, part of that is actually released for free. We have there's a digital version. We have the HoloTree background, then we have just the raw hologram that can be used in your own images if you know how to use Photoshop or something to embed it It doesn't even necessarily have to be viewed. It doesn't have to actually have to see the hologram necessarily. Just embed it in the image itself, and you'll have this effect, which is what we call our soothing scalar code set, which is meant to help just relax, you know, ease tensions, different types. And on that page, you can see some of the frequencies that we put in there, because we want to utilize things like that, like these wallpapers for cell phones or your computer, as a way to sort of give out free demos, really, because it's kind of just a pain, honestly, with some other delivery systems where they want you to change your cell phone wallpaper to hold next to a gas tank or hold next to your water for this amount. It's like, no, it's such a pain. I've had experience with those kind of things. And it's like, it's at one point, no one's going to want to pay for that because it's like, this is so inconvenient. So we're just like, let's just get it free. And so that way everyone can experience the technology. So they can do that with their gas tank eventually. We haven't released the free gas one yet, but the next one might be something like that biofuel boost, as we're calling it. So people can sample that and do their own tests with their cell phone at some of these fairs with the Aura cameras and such, too, by using their cell phone. Because I'd even show, too, that there's a positive benefit of having that person's cell phone next to it as opposed to the negative ones you usually see with cell phones. Like, you know, this is my guess. I'm not sure exactly. I'm not guaranteeing that part, but that would just be my guess. Judging from what we've seen already with some of the tests with this digital versions of this technology. But getting back to the gas stuff, one of the most intriguing tests, I would say, that I think especially those out there who are physicists and scientists, we would love your thoughts on this one. Because one of the most sort of freaky tests we've seen with this technology, which essentially, if we had to just be skeptical and a lay person, it kind of just looks like a piece of plastic. It looks like a random piece of plastic is kind of what our product looks like. And what we did on a couple of tests now was we've had just to see if the effect gas itself, if it goes, doesn't have, see if it actually has to go through the combustion chain, or is there some physical properties of the gas being changed, like we even were talking about earlier, Vinny, changing, you know, things on a chemical level like that. And so one of the tests was done with the car off, and the probe for the 5-gas analyzer stuck directly down the gas tank's hose that leads into the gas tank. And then our technician got a baseline for that, and we saw the hydrocarbons just shoot up like crazy. 20-some thousand parts per million to 10,000, going zany, 5,000, 20,000, just go wacky. And so then he introduced the product, our little pieces, and he put it just by where the nozzle is, and you see the hydrocarbons normalize about 2,000 parts per million. So not only did it stop fluctuating, it went down a lot. without having to go through a combustion chain, the car wasn't on. And so then we were saying, well, is it because it's in the car? Is that why this is maybe being affected? So let's go ahead and just get a spare gas can and do the same test. And so we did the same test. This one, the hydrocarbon went off the chart of the meter, so we couldn't even get a baseline on it. But the noxious particulates on this one, that actually did stabilize at about 280 parts per million, if I remember correctly. And we introduced the technology, you know, which essentially is these pieces of plastic. We jokingly call it magic plastic. And we go and we put this on top of the gas can and watch over about the course of about 15 minutes, the noxious particulates went down by half, so 140 parts per million. And so those kind of tests like that had myself, you know, my associate Jim and our other associate Matt, it's got us scratching our heads because we're like, what exactly attributes to that? And we think we might be getting a little closer to a theory and some new experiments to test that, but it's one of those conundrums. So that's what I'm saying. I think I'd love to hear the take on anyone in your audience, yourself, Vinny, what you think might be going on, because to think about what energy it would take to change that state of matter like that, let alone the odds of it changing in the way we wanted it to, are like phenomenally high. That's not going to happen. and they need phenomenally high amounts of energy, or at least what it takes to go through the combustion chain of the car. And none of that was present in these tests, but yet we saw this effect. So pretty profound stuff.
Well, maybe it's kind of like, how do I put it? It's kind of like everything that travels through the air has resistance, and what might be happening here is kind of like in a combustion chamber, I think. I think this is how the vaporizing carburetor was supposed to work. Correct me if I'm wrong. But if you kind of make the particulates of gas smaller, somehow force them to compress themselves together into smaller particulates as they're being squirted in through fuel injectors or carburetors and what have you, it actually increases the efficiency and reduces emissions to virtually zero. So maybe what the device is actually doing is compressing the particles to a degree using frequency so that it might perhaps, I don't know, make the particles smaller and more tightly bound, hence easily burnable, hence give off less emissions? Because apparently like 90% of what comes out of your tailpipe is just unburned hydrocarbons.
Yep, that's a big one. And so that's one of the things that the hydrocarbon, it tends, like that's why we don't say we guarantee a hydrocarbon reduction, but we do see a regulation. So what does that mean? Well, that means it either kind of goes up or down, but it stabilizes. And sometimes, and this is why we have our technicians looking at it, because our actual mechanics will tell us, well, the hydrocarbons going up isn't necessarily a bad thing because of depending on the throughput of the engine and what the rest of the numbers look like. And so, you know, sometimes, it really just depends on a lot of factors on the internal combustion engine. And that's one of the things that I ran into doing research on this, because this is one of the things that I would just like to state again for the record, is that our version of this technology isn't based on anyone else's. There's other versions of this stuff. There's people that will copy it. There's a way you can kind of sort of copy some of these things that may work okay for a little bit sometimes. But our version is homegrown. It's proprietary. It's what we made. And, so we have a lot of control on how it's working, and so we know, and we have a good idea of why. And so this is where I found researching the internal combustion engine, where it's so archaic, you can see the obsolescence of it, and there is a theoretical threshold. And this is why some of these conventional hardware and additive manufacturers are interested in talking with us, like the atomizers, like because there's new atomizers that work awesome. Like you mentioned, they're kind of like, it's sort of like integrating the carburetor thing into the fuel injector aspect to do exactly what you talked about, which we're theorizing is sort of a form of what we're doing too. But there's a threshold because of the actual physical components of the engines that we're using, the four-stroke engines. I mean, because theoretically, a diesel engine is better, so is a rotary engine. These things are better. They're more efficient designs, but we don't use them. Why? Well, because probably because the tooling would just be too much to change in all the factories, I'm guessing, honestly. But we need to change that. We need to really kind of move away from these things eventually because there's better ways to do it. And so when we're doing these codes, I'm looking at things going like, well, it's not just about working with the fuel. We have to look at the car. Like, I want this catalytic converter to get hot faster. So that's another test that we still have to do. We have to see if some of the code we put in for that is working right. But it seems to work better when the catalytic converter is there. We've had those kind of tests when someone's had a bad cat, and we've seen the technology still knock it down, but it does knock it down better with the catalytic converter, which would theoretically be the case if this code was working right, and it seems to be. So, but once again, we're dealing with characteristics of the car, not the fuel. You know, so like, I mean, I'm even thinking about entering in drag coefficients like you see in B2 bombers. Let's see if we can change the drag coefficient in front of the car. So that way you get the fuel burns, you don't have to use as much fuel because you're not needing as much resistance by the air. So it's just kind of weird things like that that has to go into it. And once again, it seems ultimately what we're talking about here is specific information that somehow we're transferring and is cohering matter in the way we want it to. So it's kind of spooky even to me, honestly, Vinny. That's kind of why I completely understand the skepticism, and I don't get offended, because I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't believe this either if I didn't see it work so many times, you know?
Well, it's, again, I think this is can be interpreted as evidence that matter is conscious and actually responds to our consciousness as well, to a degree.
Yeah, I think that, yes, absolutely. The awareness, consciousness, information, how they all play together, and one can't be there without the other. And, I agree with you, because that was one of the things that I've brought up, a different perspective on this technology, when we've had meetings or even when I'm talking to colleagues like Jeff Harvey, for instance. And what I'm saying, like, you know, I'm not so much sure that we're affecting matter. Like, I'm not so sure we're, like, kind of proverbially pushing over dominoes here.
Maybe you're tamping into something that's already there that's being communicated to you kind of psychically, sort of thing.
Exactly. That's what I was saying. I think that actually what we're doing is we're communicating with things. Like, we're not pushing things. We're telling it, hey, domino, it's really cool when you fall over. Oh, really? Why? Because this happens and everyone loves it. Oh, I'm going to jump over that. You know what I mean? It seems like more of that kind of case than it is like, you know, we proverbially, you know, send an air puff at the domino, which is kind of weird, right? It seems like that would be the easiest explanation. It's some kind of force, a wave force, but there's no calculable force. It seems to be very much information. Somehow information is being transferred, which the only models that seem to explain it has to do with the scalar fields and such in modern academics. But this is why we have our pedigrees, like I said, looking for alumni in modern academics to see where they've gotten and what they'd be willing to share on the current physics model of even electron clouds. What do they think of that these days? Because we're looking to communicate, because that's what we're realizing that we're doing in a sense. We're communicating with different types of matter, different types of life in that sense. And I've noticed that since we've taken more of that approach, things seem to be more effective. So, yeah.
It's kind of like the difference between forcing somebody to do something and asking them very nicely and providing them rewards for it, you know? In essence, you're kind of turning matter into a debt slave to a degree.
Well, it obviously chose to participate in the reality that we're experiencing.
Oh, yeah, but only if it's aware of the choice on a subconscious level, you know, like in the Matrix.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're serving as, just to, you know, inform these little atoms that, hey, you have a choice here too. I guess that could be the case. And ultimately, I think that is why we approach things that we do is, you know, we're not looking to impose necessarily like will. That's kind of why we're looking at more as communication, asking what we're working with if they want to do it, not just like, we're going to push this wave at you and make it happen. It's like, no, that's not how it works. It's not as effective either. You know, like if you drag, even in conventional medicine, it's like it's shown like how someone has a positive attitude about it, they're probably going to do better than the one that got drugging, kicking and screaming, you know?
Yeah. It's almost like, I think this is actually probably half of the reason why reductionism even exists, because people don't want to take responsibility that their thoughts actually cause physical things.
Yeah, I think that it's a lot of people assign blame to the chain of causality, and they're not necessarily the same thing. And one doesn't hinge on the other, and causes are infinite in an infinite multiverse. So there's always different chains of causality to observe.
Yeah.
Which gets, yeah, so... Yeah, I know that kind of probably sound kind of convoluted to some people, but it's like rewind it and you'll see what I mean. So,
yeah. Well, it's almost like people don't appreciate reality to a degree. Like, it's almost like they've lost respect for it, you know? As a result, they've tried to put all these rules and everything. It's what happens in every single tyranny, right? You know, it just, you gain control of something and then you start to impose your rules on it, regardless of whether or not how that substance wants to act, sort of thing. That's what science has been basically corrupted into doing, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's turned into its own kind of religion. And that's what some things like, a doctor that I really respect, Dr. Bruce Lipton, talks about, because he's a reductionist materialist. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with his work and how he ultimately, you know, proved himself wrong in his own microbiology. He's like, wait a minute. There is something to this whole, like, we control our DNA thing, and proved it. So it happens because we're looking at things as being subject to chaos and chance when there's really no such thing. And there's a logic to that flow. You know, it only appears chaotic because there's some order of which it's compared to, which in itself gives it form. It's a form. It's identified as chaos.
Which actually sounds very similar to how the aliens' battle formations worked in Ender's Game. That's appeared strange, chaotic, exactly. But they were under control.
Exactly. It looks chaotic. It looks very strange. It looked almost organic, but there was coherence. You know what I mean? Like how you know, like I'm sure in that movie, a lot of listeners who notice how some of the way the drones would reach out looked awful lot like, you know, tree branches or tree roots.
Yeah.
You know I mean, which is a fractal expression of how these cells are dividing and multiplying.
Mm.
So fun, this reality. And I think you're right. I think a lot of people do take this reality way too much for granted. And I think that, yeah, a lot of it is attributed to the social programming, be it religion or just, you know, popular opinion that has told everyone that we live in a boring world that's all composed of marbles. And that if we're lucky, there's some judgmental dude in the clouds who's going to tell you if you go have fun or not when you leave here, if you believe in that. It's like there's way more to this than that.
Yeah. I've always found it ironic how some people are very, very sure about their perception of God, you know, have strong beliefs that they're unwilling to have challenged and whatnot, and they actually hate and try to destroy the lives of people who question those kind of things, because it's how they derive power for themselves is through their strong belief. And if you manage to prove their beliefs are actually based upon fallacy, it's almost like they feel powerless all of a sudden, and they hate you for taking away their power.
Yeah, absolutely. And their foundation of what they think is right and wrong. You know, I've had these conversations with people so many times, like when I've told them I'm not into religion. Oh, so you must be like really bad person and Satan worshiper and this and this. Like, no, I just don't follow organized religion. Because why? Because I don't need it. I don't need a rule that's written on a paper to tell me not to steal from people or try to kill people for no reason. You know what I mean? I just don't need a rule to tell me that. And I'd ask people, like, if you need a rule for that to happen, like, yeah, that's just you. You know, that's just, then you, a lot of people might think you're a bad person. Sorry, accept it. But if you need that rule, like, then that's just not what religion is supposed to be there for. You know, this is not what spirituality is. You know, what understanding the interconnectivity of everything, I guess you can say, instead of spirituality for those who, you know, don't like dogmas either because of the sort of connotation and association that spirit has been given now because of all these sort of, you know, hardcore believers and fanatics. And, you know, it's like, I know I offend a lot of people when I talk about religion, and it's like, I'm not really sorry, because to me, I kind of see the people who are stuck in religion as being stuck in an elementary school grade and they haven't passed the test yet. It's like, come on, guys, it's just simple spelling and arithmetic. Do it. You know, you're part of this infinite thing. It tells you in all these books, they tell you the same thing. And then the rest of us are saying the same thing. But like how you're saying, it's they have created this foundation of lies from other lies to keep people in control. And that's all it is. And that's, I mean, I've had these conversations with friends and family and people I don't know, and I had to say, I'm sorry, I can show you history and it will prove this right. So it's like, it's not belief, it's just observation. Yeah.
Well, imagine how difficult it is to control the consciousness of somebody who believes in infinite consciousness, to control the possibilities of somebody who believes in infinite possibilities.
Exactly. And I think that's a concept that obviously was left out of these religions. Like, they didn't want people to know that they're part of the infinite directly, and that, yes, we can synchronize with fantastic realities. I mean, in a sense, it does feel powerful. Like we talked about, I created this, or I that hurricane was there because of this, and I made that gold bar appear, whatever it is, doesn't matter. It's more of a synchronization with the reality. It's not that that was necessarily created by just the thought. It's like the pathway of thought created the same sine wave, you know, linked up with the reality where that was the highest probability. And so, yeah, it's like, it's so in a lot of ways, this is one of the things that I would tell people at one point who say we're really into even just Christianity. I'd be like, well, if you're so into Jesus, like, how come you didn't, like, look more into the story? Like, wouldn't you want to find out more about this character than just what this book said? Like, wouldn't you want to see what else, or if anyone else saw this person around the world? You know, so I'm going to, even if I don't usually start from a denigrating point of view, I just let people know where I stand in posterity, but like when I'm talking to someone, I try to be, you know, as much as compassionate as they are about it. So if they have a, you can see that they have a sincere interest or some kind of, or at least sincerely allowing the possibility of what I'm saying to be there, I'll tell them, like, just check out more of the Jesus story than you knew. Like, cause it is an anomaly. I mean, I'm not saying I don't believe in anything here. That's what I think a lot of people think. It's just, there is some kind of anomaly relating to this archetype or this person, whatever the hell it was, Jesus, as well as some of these other figures for one reason or another. And it's an intriguing story, and it does link to fantastic stuff. Why not? Keep going. Follow it. You're going to find, like what everyone else finds, including, you know, scientists. At one point, you run into ETs and ghosts, you know, in science or spirituality. It just ends up there, you know?
Well, I think that it's quite strange the level in which people have been taught to deny what's measurable, to actually protect themselves from evidence, whilst at the same time claiming that there is no such evidence, and if there is, they're the one that has it, when they don't. You know, it can't be anything other than mind control, in my professional opinion. You know, and that's what education has become. It's become basically a graduate course in state mind control.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Earlier, when you were talking about those who, you know, do significant things to the world, you can say usually don't follow that formula, and it makes ask why. It's not necessarily that there's no value inherently in the education system. I think people aren't looking at the education system like a puzzle itself. So yes, there is information in there that they're trying to teach you, and you think it's about the grades, but it's not. It's not about the grades. It's about recognizing what the system is doing, like you're talking about, and how you can how you factor in and how you can fit yourself in. I mean, I learned that even in high school, knowing how to sort of buck the system, because I knew what I actually needed to graduate versus what they told everyone you had to take, which wasn't the truth. So I was able to have like in a sense, I barely graduated high school because I didn't have a whole bunch of extra units I didn't need, because I just went home. I'm like, why would I want to sit here for? I'm going to go to college for this stuff. So I'm going to take what I need to get there, and that's it. You know? So everyone would just trip out. Like, how are you doing this? I'm like, well, because I know I can do it, and I can. It says on the California law, you know, like what you need and what you don't. So if they disagree with me, I say this is what it says. Sorry. Yeah. You know? So yeah, knowing that, it's like a Rubik's Cube. Figure out the Rubik's Cube, and you got it. You don't have to keep going back to school, you know? And so that's one of the things that I'm sure, you know, especially those who come from like a shamanistic or spiritual path in different ways, when they talk about things like the control mechanisms that are put in place right now by some secret societies and such, it's like, yeah, they're dastardly. They're some of the worst people around that you can imagine. But some of them also are playing that role because they're saying, like, you have to be smart enough to see this if you really want to get out in space, for instance, or if you really want to jump into the multiverse. It's like, if you can't figure out this little riddle right here, you're not going to be able to figure it out over there, and it's worse than just not eating for a day or two. You're just squashed and dead. You know, like how you're talking about the Andy story. It's like, your ankles are gone now. Sorry. You know what I mean? So it's a little, the stakes are higher. So I can understand to a degree why some of the path of resistance has been put in front of us so harshly. You know, and that's something I had to learn to sort of forgive too. And I kind of come up with the analogy of like, and ultimately all the things that the proverbial they have done to us really has only made us stronger. None of us are dropping over from radiation poisoning. We haven't died of fluoride, all the pesticides, or all this other stuff. The GMOs, people are still munching it and growing bigger. You know what I mean? So it's not diminishing us, actually. And we're living longer. Even with the bad medicine, we're still living longer, getting bigger, stronger. So it's like it's kind of like they're the proverbial weight that we're exercising with. So don't get too mad at that barbell. Just put it up and keep doing it, and you're going to get stronger, and you're going to evolve, and it's not going to matter, pretty much.
Well, it's also a measure of what do you want to do with your life? You know, are you wanting to do something that's meaningful, that inspires change, or do you just want to do what somebody else is telling you to do so that you can survive? Mm-hmm. You know, you do actually have to make a choice. Both roads are actually really hard. One road, when you're working for somebody else, you wind up hating that person who employs you so much that that hate spills over and you start hating yourself for actually still being employed to that motherfucker. And then the other part of it is you hate the people who are suppressing creativity and everything that's good in humanity out there, and you're trying to actually create a device or a business or something like that to serve a particular function, to help the human race, or to help evolution, or help something grand that is bigger than yourself, and you feel really good about it. But you hate the fact that you have to work so hard and that there are so many scumbags who are trying to challenge you, not by genuinely challenging you, but by denying that what you're doing has any validity, even if you can prove it.
Yeah, so true. So very true. And I think that's one of the problems we hadn't even mentioned, obviously, with the modern academics, science in general. It's rule by decree, not by experiment or data. And so you have these people are just more interested in their tenure than actually doing science, and it's a shame, really. Because some ways I can seem kind of disrespectful to some of these people in these different places, but really it's more like I'm just disappointed. It's like why would you go through that trouble and then stop caring about your discipline, you know what I mean? That's why I never understood about some of these scientists who people are looking at as renowned scientists in the world, and like what experiment have they done lately? What have they done?
May I postulate a theory?
Yeah.
When somebody really, really wants a job and they go on the unemployment benefit because they can't find one, eventually they get so sick and tired of looking for work that they no longer want a job anymore and continue drawing that government benefit. So does a scientist with tenure get used to being on the benefit of being unremovable, constantly paid, and having lackeys to do all your work and thinking for you so that you don't have to do anything? You get so comfortable with the lack of challenge in your life that you become a slave to it.
Yeah, definitely. And, that, and once again, the social programming aspect comes in. And this is why this is something that actually is very close to all of our hearts here at our company. Is that we would like to offer a sort of psychic relief in the sense of like just a break in that programming for a second, so people can be like, you know what, maybe I can create something cool, or you know what, I am proficient enough to that skill to go ahead and do that. Because I find that so much of this programming is hinged on the systematic self-deprecation that has been built into everyone's mind to feel that they're not good enough, or there's guilt, shame, and blame on top of things on all of this. And these projected ideals, these projected unattainable ideals that they tell everyone is a norm, but no one has. So it's like the proverbial carrot in front of the horse or donkey there that no one's ever going to get. And so once again, solve that Rubik's Cube puzzle. And then you got the carrot. You know, it's right there. It's always been there.
I'm really sick of there's a way of argument that officialdom brings up, which is that my argument to your argument, which just proved my argument wrong, is to shift the goalposts again and again and again and again and again and again and again.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, there's definitely, you can definitely try to shift the goalposts like that, but ultimately, as we're seeing now, that too much information and awareness is happening to where people are learning how to make their own energy how to grow their own food out of very small confined areas. So at one point, it's kind of like it gets too blatant in terms of any oppressive force. And I think that, and this is what I kind of jokingly refer to these things as, some of these conversations as doomsday checkers, when you kind of say, okay, well, they're going to do this, and they're going to constantly do this, this, and that. And I'm like, well, there's a counter for all of these, and this is why we see so many more whistleblowers, and they're coming out more and more inventions like what we're doing and other people are doing. They're having profound effects because, in a sense, they're simple. Just like it's simple to play, a favorite song for a lot of people. Some of the best songs everyone remembers are very simple songs to play, but once you have to know how to play them. And once you do, you can play it all the time. And so it's very similar with a lot of these techniques with free energy, healing, and all these other types of formulas. There's formulas. And once you know the formula, you can keep doing it. And you can't keep that idea. It's like that's why the patent thing is falling apart, because it's just not going to work. You can't just say you own everything, because it just doesn't work that way. We're doing what we're doing. I know other people are doing stuff too. Garages all over the world, so they can't hold it back much longer. And that's just kind of how it goes. I'd say my theory is that pretty soon, all of a sudden, Ford's going to have the, clean electric infusion or a hydrogen car. Here it is. Boom. Here's electric company with the ultra efficient solar panels all of a sudden.
Yeah. Bam. Here's the new world order global government financed by your carbon taxes to pay for it all. Aren't we nice?
Yeah, in a sense, because ultimately this is one of the things that's the other part of the Rubik's Cube, because it's like the people at the top, they don't think in money. Like, they make money. Like, they can just say all of a sudden, bam, okay, that's happening. There's $60 trillion wherever we need it. It doesn't matter. We make it. So it goes beyond that. It gets into the esoteric stuff, the secret societies, and all this other stuff, because they've had this knowledge. And then the technology that we're talking about, okay, what we're seeing there, I'm sure some of your audience has picked up on this too, it's on the verge of materialization or actual alchemy. So at one point, you hear these stories too about just making gold or just making anything. So it's kind of, that's what we are on the threshold of in terms of society, not just our company. We're talking like in garages. Soon enough, there's going to be certain, people will have the knowledge and the ability, if they really apply themselves, to do this. So it's kind of, they see this. They see this control mechanism going away. So that's why even in the old Illuminati plan with the whole, Project Bluebeam being the escalation after the asteroid thing like we're seeing now. It's like, because that's the inevitable evolution. You have to try to just push the threat out further to have a bigger scale of gap between the populace's technology awareness and what's out even further. And that's the only place that you can do that, is literally go outside space or inwards in the inner space. And so that's going to be that buffer for a little bit. And this is just my own theory. That's why I think we're seeing what we're seeing now in Russia and the Ukraine, because they're kind of, in a sense, reverting back to the Cold War, because that justifies the industrial buildup. Without actually having to fight a phantom enemy, without actually having to get into Project Bluebeam or announce that there's anything like that around. You can perpetuate the lie for even longer. You can stall the timeline. That's just my guess. But I think that's what's going on, because I'm pretty good at what I do, and so is my crew, but it's not like we're the only ones who can do this, and they can't kill everybody. And they're not killing everybody. So that means this is coming out, and this is going to be here soon. So,
Actually, I'll disagree. They can kill everybody, but they're just not. Why that is, who knows? I say this because I've actually interviewed a former member of a CIA assassination teams who got 17 kills out of 17 over his assassination career, where they could just go to an ATM and take out $250,000, pay for all their vehicles, their weapons, their surveillance equipment and everything on the site, and set up triangular shoot points and everything like that, assassinate people in public squares, and hold back the police, bribe a few officials and things like that, so that they have a few extra minutes before the police turn up to the crime scene, and then they're away, won't be caught, and then they bribe up a whole bunch of other officials and what have you, just appoint a commission to investigate the assassination that will only look at the investigation of the assassination, not who actually did the assassination, and cover it up perpetually. This is the thing.
I'm just going to say, just from my knowledge, that there's a reason why that whoever that hitman was, he only did 17. Okay, I'm sure that's well, fine. That's
here's the reason why.
That's what I'm saying. 17 of them isn't, you know, 8 billion. Okay, and
oh yeah, but there ain't 8 billion people doing your work, though.
We're saying everybody. And so, yes, there's Doomsday's devices that can vaporize the planet, but like I was saying earlier, if you talk to enough of these contacts with enough clearance to go above, like that guy's, like, guarantee, basically, they'll tell you there's always something weird that keeps the Doomsday device from clicking on. And usually it's some ETs and ghosts. It's what it comes down to, once again. So whatever angle you go, you run into weirdness. And so that's really why we haven't been vaporized. Because, yeah, they have the megaviruses. They have the hydrogen bomb will vaporize us back in the day. It doesn't matter. But it doesn't go on for a reason. And it's not just because necessarily the universe is kumbaya. I think it's because ultimately there is shared resources here that aren't just ours. And so people aren't going to let us blow up this planet because we don't necessarily own it. So they're like, no.
Yeah. Well, that's actually what Kennedy said to his military advisors, who said as soon as the missiles crossed that little parallel there going into Cuba, that they should launch a preeminent strike against a preemptive strike against Russia. And he said no. And that one man averted nuclear disaster for the whole world. And they killed him for it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's probably been others, you know what I mean, since then that we've never heard about. That happens all the time too. It's tragic. It sucks. Our best and brightest get blinked out and no one ever knows. And it's a tragedy. It is. And I think that's why the stuff like what we're talking about, the technology that myself and other people are doing, the more it comes out, the more we have a chance to actually honor some of those people who really did save us. Because it happened.
Have you ever noticed that there's a hell of a lot more power in self-sacrifice than in sacrificing somebody else?
Oh yeah, there seems to be, I think that is obviously known by the secret societies, and I think that's why you've seen in history where they would try to tell the people it's good to throw yourself in the volcano. So honored. Go throw yourself in the volcano. Yeah, you know, I think that's why they did that, because yes, it seems to be some kind of information charge. I don't even know what you would call it.
It's the power of will, like the Force.
In a sense, but yeah, what is that? What is that? You know, because there is quantifiable things that we're looking at here that show that, you know, even implosive forces relating to why 27 grams, whatever, goes away from a body when it dies. And, you know, these kind of oddities, because there's some kind of relative density fluctuation. So that correlates with some kind of amplitude, if you want to translate to that language. So it's just intriguing to me. I love it. That's why I love physics. I love hearing it's not as enigmatic as we maybe once thought. We're very, very close to understanding all these things that we once called psychic or paranormal or weird. It's like, no, it's not weird. It's just reality, and here's how to do it. You know, it's really cool.
Yeah, here's how to do it. This is how it works, et cetera, et cetera. But that's witchcraft. That's alchemy. No, bro, it's science, okay? Kind of like that old quote, is that a race wielding sufficiently advanced technology would appear as magic to any primitive race that they encountered.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, and this is another thing. In fact, this reminds me of an argument that I had with one of my friends when we were like 15 or something. We collected these models, and I collected the sci-fi ones. He collected the kind of fantasy ones, you know? And I had an argument that you could do anything with advanced technology that you could do with magic.
Yeah, I'm sure, like, in a sense, it's just different methods, you know? Because ultimately that's what we're saying, right? It's like magic is a method, science is a method, but what makes it magic? What makes it science? It's just semantics, you know, ultimately.
Yeah, yeah, more or less. Maybe science is magic.
I think so. I really do. I think that there, you're, even if when we know how we're replicating this compound, it's still like amazing on the quantum level of what causes those bonds. Because once again, I was saying, like, everything with all the space between it should pass through itself. It just seems to magically find a approximation point where it seems like we're touching something, but it's more like a magnetic repulsion effect that's happening. I mean, so, dude, what's that? I mean, that's freaking amazing to me. Right? So I think so. I think they're one and the same, you know, and I think that the magic term is maybe what they just called it, you know, in history, you know, the method that we're using right now, because to me it sounds very similar. You know, you have an idea, you test the idea, and then you know if the idea is real or not, so, or it works or not. You know?
Yeah. And how can people dream about and come up with technologies in exactly the same way? I mean, the example I like to use all the time is the invention of the telescope. I think like 9 people on different sides of the Earth all came up with it on the same night.
Yeah, isn't that trippy?
Yeah. You know, so, yeah. Now, I'm just thinking that what my idea of God is, I think I've explained this on the radio before, but it bears repeating, is God's like a macro organism. Okay, so just like there's 5 trillion cells that make up my body, there's X amount of trillions of organisms that make up the Earth, which is one cell of a much larger organism, and so on and so forth. But for the moment, the God complex, the consciousness, and the macro is the Earth for us. Like that's a representation of like something physical that you can see and interpret as a higher form of life form than all of us microscopic by comparison organisms around here, and we all fulfill different functions and things of that nature within this organism, just like every cell in our body does. Now every single cell has consciousness, however, and so that means that any larger organism that is made up of many smaller ones have all of these little influences on its consciousness, kind of like small cells whispering slowly all together, or chanting, or what have you, can actually produce different effects, much like people would be sitting around in a drumming circle around a fire on a full moon or something like that, and there's all these different effects that happen in parts that light up the brain, etc. So what the will of God is I believe the latent psionic energy of every living conscious being within this macroorganism called the Earth, all having their own little influences and what have you, kind of like shooting billiard balls into the realms of possibilities and having all these sorts of strange and amazing and allegedly unexplainable and seemingly random reactions. And that's what the will of God is to me, the random sequence of synchronicity that is only brought into existence by the collective consciousness of all living beings.
Yeah, I can see that interpretation. And I think that that interconnectivity is what we're really beginning to understand with some kind of logic. You know, those proverbial billiard balls aren't just going around chaotically anymore. Now we're seeing where the bank shot came from a little bit more on certain instances, because another observation our colleague made to Matt about synchronicity, that once again, statistically it seems to be very similar to those entanglement principles and experiments that have been done in different institutions. So we're seeing these repeating patterns, and repeating patterns are what? An algorithm. An algorithm plotted as a waveform, you know, sine wave. And so, you know, we're talking, everyone's kind of somewhat speaking the similar language here, and we're all kind of interconnect in these different, these sort of waveforms.
Hmm. Hey, in what kind of way does Al Gore dance? With an algorithm.
Algorithm. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, lame joke aside, it's time for a break, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guest is Jerry Avalos, you know, kind of like Avalon, but, you know, is lost in the mist. And we'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. But just remember, of course, again, reiterate, listener-supported broadcast, it gets achieved because of your financial support, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you so much for doing so over all these years. Long may it continue to expose scumbaggery by giving some decent people a voice out there with profound thoughts so that you can enrich your minds and indeed even share the information with others to enrich theirs. We'll be right back at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.